you were saying about the observant? You were observing the observant, and then all of a sudden you became observant?
Well, yeah, somehow...
Hold a second.
They're severe-looking microphones, very serious. For whatever reason, it was put into my heart to just have this tremendous desire to understand that world, which was so kind of opposite to me, so far from me, and even scary to me. And I just suddenly really wanted to understand it. It was when I sort of walked in by mistake, kind of, to the first Carlbach conference 7 years ago. And people were saying these beautiful things that Reb Shlomo used to say, but at the same time they were orthodox, which to me was always a bad word. So I was like,
Did you grow up conservative?
No, that's also a bad word. I'm not.
Reform?
I grew up in a reform context, but, you know, spiritual but not religious is what I would say I was. I was very serious about spiritual things. I wasn't like, I didn't care, you know, ignoring it, secular. I cared too much. What I encountered in the reform world wasn't satisfying to me. It wasn't really very spiritual. And so I became an opera singer. So, and that is, you know, that kind of, depending on how you do it, art is can be a really deep spiritual thing.
Well, you're an opera singer.
I am. Or I'm a singer. So anyway, but I happened upon this thing kind of by mistake, so led. And I just was like, what is this? I just really want to understand what's going on inside the heads of these people. And I asked all these questions, and the more that was explained, like, the stupider it seemed. It just seemed really dumb. And so I got this idea that I needed to live it, that I needed to have experiential understanding, not just kind of intellectual. So within a week, I learned of what being observant was, and then I was it. I just started it.
And what did you discover in that week?
So what did I discover?
Yeah, what was it that was...
Bekitzer or...
The what?
Bekitzer, in short, standing on one foot, or...
No. Feel free to... I'm interested in... You came from another world to discover yourself...
Not to discover myself. You know, not to discover myself. Or maybe you could say to discover myself by getting really clear on the opposite. In other words, I didn't expect to find in the religious world, like, that I would fit there. I was open to the idea, you know, I was open to anything. And that is part of what divides me from the religious world. Because openness, I mean, it's really interesting. There's a tension. There's a paradox for balei tshuva, people who come from a secular background and embrace the religious world. On the one hand, the religious people who welcome them somewhat, it feels like a validation of their choices in their world, and that feels good. On the other hand, it very much goes against everything they hold dear, the idea that someone would turn away from what they grew up with. Because they're terrified of their own kids turning away from what they've raised them as.
Which many do.
Well, in this context that we're sitting right now, this sort of represents some of those who do. And the idea of being open-minded to something vastly different from what you're used to is very much against what I found in the religious world. Like, the answer to so many things that I would say, hey, let's try this. Well, I don't understand. It's not what I grew up with. It's not what I'm used to. And that was like end of story, as opposed to beginning of, well, that's not what I grew up with, but let's explore it. No, it was like sufficient to reject. New openness to new experience, openness to the other, to things that were different, is kind of really rejected by that world, because it maintains a kind of purity about what they've got going on, and that gives them a kind of security. And it's all understandable, because we're all made up of impulses toward keeping things the same and impulses toward newness and renewal. It's just that I guess the proportions differ among, you know, along a spectrum among all of us. So the Orthodox world, the religious world, is more conservative. It's more weighted toward doing the same thing over and over, finding somehow security in that, and meaning in that security, as opposed to those who find that mind-numbing or not meaningful because it's so rote. So what I found, first I was challenged to learn all the stuff there is to learn, all the brachas, all the blessings, all the liturgy, and I like learning stuff, so that was really cool. And then, of course, meeting new people and meeting people who were from this world was fascinating. But what I found was, after doing it for a while, I started to feel like a robot, and I started to lose a sense of spiritual connection. And that's too precious to me to give up, even you know, for somebody else's approval. So the more I did things consistently and fully that would garner approval from, you know, those of this world, the more I lost my own sense of spiritual connection and connection with the divine. And I needed to make myself stop. That's what I found. Like, there's a tendency in me that, you know, I began to notice to... There's a certain kind of enjoyment of consistency and doing rote things, doing things, you know, sort of perfectly, always. But that's, I think, a false god. So, it was a little hard to stop. I mean, it's funny. There's a momentum built up, a kind of inertia. I'm very subject to inertia. So, I'm very subject to inertia. Once I'm doing whatever, it's hard for me to change seat. So that was kind of my experience, and I experienced, I mean, it was a fascinating experience, and there are lovely people in this world. They just fear all the things that I hold sort of highest, and that makes them rejecting and judgmental of those things. I see a tremendous amount of judgment, and it comes from fear. We only get judgmental when we're sort of afraid of losing ourselves, afraid of something. So even the people who are really lovely, so central to their identity was this idea that we're doing it the right way and all other ways are wrong. That was, like, tough for me, you know, ultimately. And then there are some people who are just really gross, who were very imposing on other people up there. Their worldview, and that, you know, this is the only way, the only right way, the one right way, the Cairo way. And that was sort of very harmful to somebody else's mind. You know, somebody, let's say children growing up, and they start to think about other things, that kind of smackdown of, you know, you're wrong. What you sense in your inner truth as right, that's wrong. That's like a form of evil. It's like really destructive. So anyway, I had to sort of step back from it, and now I'm like in recovery. So I got to create for my own self the experience that a sort of version, watered down maybe version of the experience that people who grow up in this world and end up feeling pulled out of it, and it's a very kind of challenging, maybe traumatic process to leave everything that you knew and to leave a world where people are very intolerant generally of the path you're taking or of difference. And so I kind of went through a little bit of that. I kind of didn't know, well, what, you know, who do... My whole world started to be people of this world, and then I didn't kind of want to be there anymore. And I was like, I lost track of all the people that I used to, you know, a lot of the people I used to know. And anyway, so it's been an interesting journey, and I have some... Like, one friend of mine, I feel really blessed to have met him. He grew up in a Crown Heights family, and that is not where he could stay. He tried getting married, it didn't work out. And his parents are like, you just need to get married again, and it's not the right answer. So he's exploring all these other things, and I'm so proud of him. And I feel sort of like an older sister, or like a surrogate mom in some ways, that, you know, you want your parents to, in a good family situation, that your parents can see what your individuality is and really support when you make discoveries and you have these kind of this healthy growth. And if your parents just don't have the ability to see your beauty and see the beauty of what you're doing, and you lack that kind of support, especially when you're kind of leaving everything you knew, that's really hard. And I want to be able to be that support. I can't help it. I mean, I'm so proud of this young man, and So that's something that my following the studio, I guess, has enabled me to do. I couldn't really otherwise probably have been there for him in the same way, because I wouldn't have known, wouldn't have really understood what he was coming from and what this meant. So it's been a fascinating journey.
Now, if I follow you, where are you now?
West 24th Street. Well, I'll point out that I'm wearing a skirt that does not reach past my knees. That's new. So I like shifted my whole wardrobe to kind of see if I could make that work and see what that would feel like. There's a wonderful op-ed in the New York Times a week or two ago from Rabbi Dov Linzer, who's a beautiful man, a beautiful being. He's an Orthodox rabbi. Dean of Chobeve Torah's rabbinical seminary that is very liberal in the Orthodox world, still in the Orthodox world. And he was talking about women and modesty, kind of in response to what's been going on in Israel with modern Orthodox girls getting spit upon by little girl, 8-year-old girl, by ultra-Orthodox, by Haredi men. And, you know, if you step back from it, spitting upon another, you know, that's just not the highest energy. Just not. Stop. No matter what you're, you know, who's who or what's just spitting upon, it's just really ugly. So what he was saying is that this whole idea of modesty, if men have sexual thoughts aroused by seeing women, he said very beautifully, and I can't do justice at all to it, but it's worth checking out, that basically the responsibility lies in the men, not in the women to change themselves. Men will always have stuff aroused by being in the presence of the feminine. That's how they're designed. That's the way it goes. And if you cover up more and more and more, finally you'll have a burqa on, but just seeing the vague female figure, you'll know that it's there and it will still arouse the same stuff. So he went into a little bit of halacha and a little bit of the text and made clear that the responsibility is on men to avert their gaze or to shift their thoughts. It's the onus is not on the women to change everything they are. And the whole idea that women and, you know, there's this idea that in the secular world, women are these sex objects. But in the Orthodox world, when so much scrutiny is placed upon women and what they're wearing, are, you know, are their knees covered? Are their elbows covered? Are their collarbones covered? It's kind of a form of the same thing. It's awful. I hated it. I hated that feeling of I'm under scrutiny. And when I decided to, like, kind of abandon that and try to remember, like, how do you shop for clothes when you're not trying to meet somebody else's standard? At first, I kind of didn't know what to do, and then I realized, oh, I would buy something not because it, you know, one of the few things that would meet the standard, but because it was cute, because I liked it. Like, I liked it. It was fun for me. Oh, wow, that's kind of different. So that whole issue was really interesting. I think bottom line is what happens in the religious world is it's a bunch of men who don't yet know, they haven't yet mastered their own selves. And the whole sexual energy is a tremendous one. It's the one that kind of runs the world, fuels the all being. And they've tried this kind of this workaround, which is to project their issues onto these external forces. And we all tend to do that. You know, that's a human tendency, this projection. But it's not, doesn't resolve the issue, and it's not the end point. It's maybe a station along the way. But to perpetuate it and to dig in one's heels even further on that kind of way of handling stuff is really sort of holding back one's real spiritual growth. So that's an interesting thing. So, you know, it was like an act of liberation to go to the store and buy something. I mean, I was involved with someone who was Haredi, and one day I bought shorts And I showed them to him. He came home and I tried them on. He's like, wow, you look really cool. And I'm like, thanks. Let's go get something to eat. And he's like, he froze. And he said, well, but I can't be seen with you like that.
And how did that feel?
Kind of horrible, made me really mad, but it wasn't. Ultimately, in that situation, I ended up putting on a skirt. And I thought, you know, my tendency is just to put on my shorts. They're so comfortable. And now I have all these skirts. So, okay, so when I'm with you, it gives me a reason to wear them. I have them. But it's a kind of hypocrisy, or it's kind of sad that, because, you know, he and I had something real and good together, you know, a relationship. We cared each other about each other. We liked each other's company. But the outside, not fear of God, but fear of the neighbors, you know, fear of judgment of other people would determine what you did or didn't do. And the whole press for conformity, it's the whole thing there. I remember the sister of this guy once said, well, if everybody just did whatever they wanted, like, how could we have that? And I thought to myself, if everybody really did what they truly, deeply felt called to do, that is my dream for the world. That is my highest vision. So, you know, she wasn't in that place that I'm in. And that's legitimate, because we're all sort of in our, on our journey, wherever we are standing on the journey, and that community or those communities are in a different place from where I'm at, and perhaps where you're at. Learning to live together is challenging, and it's always the people who are sort of further along that have the greater responsibility to help make it work, because the people who are, say, earlier, they don't have the breadth of perspective yet. And I'm talking in terms of, like, many lifetimes that we evolve in our consciousness. So I like to take the long view. But getting into the details and really getting to know individuals is, there's nothing like it. It's fascinating. So I feel, like, privileged to have been able to experience all of this and to have had people share their lives with me in this way. And sad that I miss some of the people that kind of not so in touch with. And maybe I can still be in touch with them, but, you know, sometimes there needs to be a sort of a separating period, I suppose. I'm still finding myself. So anyway, that's it. And, you know, there may be parts of me that didn't grow up with enough structure, and this world has maybe way too much structure for my taste, but maybe it fills in a little bit of a deficiency from my background or something. You know, so it's all very interesting. There are probably many layers to what this experience was for me.
What do you think it's like for women? You entered that world as a woman from another world. And what do you think it's like for those who grew up in that world?
Well, for those who, it's kind of, it works for them. It's very secure. There's a clarity about what's expected of you, what your role is, where you fit. And that can really work for people. There's a legitimate sort of thing there. But for those that it doesn't work for, it's very, very hard. I think we're moving on to the next stage. So I'm not gonna talk over this. I want to listen. But I'm going to save my voice a little bit. So when we don't have to talk over something, maybe we can continue.
Downstairs and talk.
I want to hear my friend.
Oh, okay, great. Oh, you know her?
Yeah.